Blog Talk Radio.
Welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert. Today's November 26, 2010, the day after Thanksgiving. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. I am the head moderator of the Bring Forth Forums at www.bringforth.org, a wonderful and loving community dedicated to study of the Law of One and related topics. I'll be asking Carla questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask Carla a question, please join the chat room on the webpage for In the Now at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. If you'd like to ask Carla a question live on the air, call 347-884-8770 and press the 1 key when prompted by Blog Talk's automated system. When you call, you'll be able to hear the show, but you'll be on mute until I patch you through to Carla. Again, that number is 347-884-8770. When done, I will put you back on mute, at which time you can either continue to listen to the show by phone or you can hang up and listen to the show on your computer. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Please also visit our sponsor at waternurtureslife.com for information regarding high vibration, life-changing, alkaline antioxidant water. Medically certified in Japan, it's the missing piece to radiant health for wanderers and humans alike. Again, I'm Monica Liao, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert of LL Research, and we will be here every Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Hi, Carla. How was your Thanksgiving?
Hey, Monica. It was really fine. We had some people that didn't have family to join us, and my brother came down from D.C., and we just feasted and had wonderful company and watched Avatar in the afternoon, which I hadn't seen yet. So, all in all, it was a fantastic day and one to give thanks for, that's for sure. How was yours?
Oh, wonderful. We just had a quiet day, just the family, but, you know, just the immediate family, but very nice. Definitely have a lot to be thankful for. We've had a lot of healing that's happened in our family, and we just really all were expressing our gratitude about that yesterday, so really, really, definitely a thankful day for us.
Indeed. Well, that's great.
Okay. Well, did you have any quick announcements, or would you like me to go ahead and go to the next, to the first question?
The only quick announcement is that next week I will be tuning in to this Q&A show from Nebraska, where my husband, Mick, and I will be visiting his mom, Mrs. McCarty. She is going to be celebrating her 93rd birthday, and we're going to help her.
Okay.
We have all our gifts packed for her, and we just have to throw the rest of the stuff in the car and get on the road. Looking forward
to it. Okay. Wonderful. And we will be here next week. Okay. The first question is from Jay, and just initial Jay. Carla, I know you tested the raw contact to your satisfaction based on your faith, but how would you present the Law of One to someone with a science background who is interested but very skeptical? We cannot prove authenticity, but is there anything we can offer someone who doesn't even believe in the paranormal at all? Will the information in the raw sessions withstand scrutiny, scientific scrutiny?
Well, Monica, that's a good question. First of all, you can't defend or prove anything that has to do with spiritual life or faith. If you could prove it, it wouldn't be a matter of faith. And faith is at the very center of our metaphysical reason for being here. To live a life in faith is not to believe in something because it can be proven but because it feels right to your inner self and because it resonates to you in a way that is beyond knowing, so that it's almost like a gnosis. You know it in a way that comes from intuition and insight, and you have to trust that. As far as the question about does it hold up to scientific scrutiny, I would say it holds up to the most rigorous scientific scrutiny because of the fact that the questioner was a scientist. His name was Don Elkins, and he was had several degrees from the technical side of things. He was a mechanical engineer and had a general engineering degree as well, and was a professor for 15 years at the University of Louisville Speed Scientific School. He taught mechanical engineering and physics. So when he questioned the Ra group, he was questioning from a skeptical and scientific viewpoint. And you have only to read the sessions to know how incredibly wide and deep his knowledge of the paranormal and the whole area of research that he was investigating was, because the questions that he gave were very insightful. And when Ra would throw an answer back that threw him completely on another subject, he would rally quickly and he would be asking intelligently on what the Ra was talking about. So actually most, or I won't say most, but many of the people that love the Ra material are scientists, technical people, engineers, physicists, people that became intrigued not only because of the content of the responses of Ra, but also because of the quality of Don's questioning. I don't think that there is any way that one should even attempt to prove something as metaphysically oriented as channeling, like the prophecy in the Bible, like any spiritually inspired material that, say, comes from the Holy Spirit, or that people feel that they are receiving because they are a medium within a world religion or outside of a world religion. American Indians do this, pick up information from spirit. A lot of different sources, especially Aboriginal people, indigenous peoples, feel that it is a normal part of the human personality to be able to contact the infinite, the mystery. And in no way, shape, or form can any of this be proven. There isn't really any reason to try to prove it to anybody. What I do when someone says, well, how do you know that it's real? I say, first of all, well, take a look at my website, because there are about 1,600 channeling sessions there over a period of 34 years. Excuse me, 36 years now. It's been a while since I answered this question. and I'll be doggone if I think that I could have made all that stuff up. That's too much,
for sure.
Too many words. You know, after a while, you just trust that the process works. And, of course, I always depend very heavily, as the guy said, or Jay, I don't know if it's a guy or a woman, on two things. I depend on my preparation. I pray. I invoke the archangels. I talk to Jesus. I talk to all of the people that come in the name of Jesus Christ from the unseen realms, people between incarnations, angels, that kind of thing. I protect myself, and I tune up to the very best that I can. And then I challenge the spirit rigorously, and I challenge it three times just to make sure that I'm not dozing and I'm not out of focus. By the third challenge, I'm very much in focus. And so the first time that I worked with the Ra group, I was awake at the beginning and was able, to my satisfaction, to tune and to challenge Ra as a spirit. I actually did not want to channel anything named Ra, because of the fact that I knew the Egyptian mythological system, and I didn't think that Ra was a particularly pleasant god. And, of course, they disabused me of that. You know, they said, well, yeah, you know, we're raw, but we're not that raw. You know, we're beings that come here from elsewhere. So when they said that they accepted Jesus and could say that Jesus was Lord, then I thought that they were worth bringing it in, and I put them on the horn and said, "What do you got to say?" And as soon as they spoke, just a very short message, Don asked the first question, and we were off. And that was the beginning of 106 total sessions that we did over a period of about 3 years. So when you read the Law of One material, you notice a voice there that's not my voice. It doesn't talk as I do. It doesn't sound like me particularly, because there's almost no inflection in what Ra says. It's very difficult for me to understand the questions, I mean the answers that Ra gives, because there's no inflection. There's no up and down and stopping for periods very long. It's just word, 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 and then they stop. And Don was able to hear that. He's such a brilliant guy. Miss him every day, Monica.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, my approach, if someone is a total skeptic and they say, "Well, what do you think is happening?" And I say, "Well, I think that I'm processing subconscious material consciously. And I think that it's a gift that we all have, but it hasn't been awakened by people in our culture for a long time. And I just happen to have enough of a knack that I picked it up." And people will think about that. Let's see, processing subconscious material consciously. And they'll say, "You mean you think that you're getting something on the subconscious level?" And I say, "Yes, that's what I mean. I can't explain it. I can tell you how to do it. And then you can gather your own intelligence working on that. But I don't recommend it except in a group such as groups that I offer from time to time." The basic ground rule here is what I said at the beginning. You simply cannot prove anything that is of spiritual content. You offer it. If people find it useful, that satisfies me completely. If they don't find it useful, I encourage them to move on and to find something that resonates to them, that excites them, that kindles the enthusiasm and the passion that you really need in order to investigate the truth.
Okay. As someone who has a very scientifically minded person that is very close to me, I can almost hear Jay's follow-up question from here. I can just imagine what Jay would be thinking right now if Jay is listening to this. And that would be for, now evidently there's a person that has expressed some interest that Jay is interacting with, is by the sound of the question. So the follow-up question I'm imagining would pop up would be, for someone who is equally skeptical of any sort of spirituality, whether it's the Bible or anything else, as they are of the concept of channeling or higher beings or extraterrestrials or any of that stuff, they have equal skepticism on all of the above. How would you differentiate between the blind faith that is required of many of the various religions? In other words, there's no proof of the Bible, just accept it. How do you differentiate resonating with this Law of One information when they don't even believe in the concept of resonating at all? How do you differentiate between resonating with this information versus blind faith in some religion just because somebody tells you that it's true?
Well, I never tell anybody to believe it because I say it. I tell them, read the first session of the raw material. Read session one and see if it interests you. If it interests you, keep reading until it stops interesting you. Evaluate it for its content. You can do the same thing with any source. You can do it with the Holy Bible, although heaven help you if you try to come to a quick conclusion on that one. But certainly I think one session out of the 106 is going to tell the tale. Either the person will respond to it, will be interested by it, will be curious about reading further, seeing what Don's going to ask next, and what they're going to say, or it's going to leave them cold. And if it leaves them cold, as I said, it's time to move on. I have no reason and no motivation to convince people. I'm not a proselytizer, and I don't think that the Law of One is anything like a religion. It's a philosophy of a certain type. It's a cosmology. It explains what the universe is, how it was made, where we are in it, and where we're going. And it talks about history in the light of an overriding set of principles that are usually by others called something like laws, but Ra, of course, calls them distortions of the Law of One. The only thing that's not a distortion in the Law of One is unity. Unity equaling infinity. So Ra often calls the Creator intelligent infinity. Now, if that concept interests people, then they might want to read that first session. If it doesn't interest them, and if they pick the book up and look at the first session, or they get on the computer and check out the first session in our free copy of it online, and it doesn't interest them, then I'd say, don't worry about it. This isn't your path. You know, there is undoubtedly a path for you, but this apparently isn't it, or at least it isn't it right now. You could revisit it in a couple of years and see if it speaks to you then. I've had so many people tell me, I picked up the Law of One, and I read it 10 years ago, and I just didn't respond to it. I picked it up last week, which is why I'm writing you, and it blew my head off. And it's changed my life, and I just wanted to write and tell you that. I get those letters just about every day, all over the world. People write in, and you know, it's a matter of coming to the material when you're ripe for it. And sometimes people are so ripe for it, Monica, that they'll go to a bookstore and the book will fall off a shelf and hit them on the head.
Yeah.
This has happened about half a dozen times. And so I trust the material that it will find the people that are craving it, that are looking for it. And I'm not worried about trying to encourage people to read it, because I think that the truth is out there, as they used to say on the X-Files. And if you don't find it one way, you'll find it another. This particular source happens to be keyed to the scientific mind. And so I would say that if Jay or his friend, who he has tried to introduce, you know, to the material and apparently not had great good luck, would simply just take a look at the first session. That'll probably tell the tale for him. He'll either be interested and intrigued, or it'll leave him cold. And if it leaves him cold, it's time to move on until he finds something that really does excite him.
Okay, wonderful. Very good. And I'd like to remind everyone, if they haven't read the Law of One books and you're interested in reading those books, you can download them for free at llresearch.org, or you can order the hard copies as you prefer. That's llresearch.org, and you can also visit our sister website, bringforth.org. That's bring4th.org. You can also download the books there, as well as participate in our wonderful community. We have discussions and related resources available at that website. Carla, I've got a second question from Alex, who is XL Sander on the Bring Forth discussion forum. And Alex says, I read through the Law of One, and I have been through a lot of other spiritual bodies of work also. And I do realize everything that happens to me is a mirror of my deeper inner self and the bag I packed for this incarnation. Still, I seem to have been brought into a situation, catalyst, contract, where I am not in a position to get out of the situation anymore without hurting and disappointing everyone who loves me in this life. And on top of that, I'm facing an inner urge, which is very huge. Say a soul's call to strive for something certain, where I repeatedly find myself in recurring dramas and disasters, and it's draining a lot. To a point I had given up on actually wanting to persist in this incarnation more than once. I know I'm loved. I know I'm not alone. I know I chose that for myself and contracted this, but I don't seem to get the point at all to actually why just remain here and deal with this with no lessons learned other than pain as a result of following the best intentions for others and oneself. Though I try to balance and to remain in the moment, be the best I can be and manage expectations, seek the love in the moment to finally understand what it is I'm doing not right, so this is happening over and over and over again, how can I focus more particularly on finding out the reason for recurring catalyst and to finally get the lesson straight to make progress I'm so much longing for? If it wasn't for the deeply in me seated urge that actually makes me strive for something, I would just relax and let anything be. But this constant paradox of urge versus disappointment and non-ability to achieve the urge or at least make significant progress towards it, can you shed some light on this from your point of view? Thank you for all your work and the forum here. Without it, I'd probably have been back to the other side to space-time. In love, Alex.
Oh, Alex, that's just on my heart that you're having such a horrible time. I'm so sorry. I have a great deal of sympathy for people that are suffering spiritually, such as you. Let me see what I can do with this, because it's not an easy answer. It's not even an answer that I can work out for you, but I can give you some thoughts concerning it that come to me. Okay. I feel like I am dealing with a fragile bloom that could easily have the petals plucked from it, and I want to do no harm. So come, Holy Spirit, fill the heart of your faithful and kindle in me the fire of your love. Send forth your spirit, and I shall be created, and you shall renew the face of the earth. O God, who by the light of the Holy Spirit did instruct the hearts of the faithful, grant that by that same Holy Spirit I may be truly wise and ever enjoy this consolation. Holy Spirit, please help me to answer Alex. Thank you. Dear old Holly, she's a wonderful, wonderful help to me. All right, I think the first thing is that nothing is final and nothing is over. The dark nights of the soul are unpredictable. They come and they always give way to a dawning of a new day. In your case, Alex, obviously this has not been a short night. It's been a long and tedious night, and I think that one thing that really helps is if you drop the worry and the concern and rest with peace of mind in the knowledge that day will come, that the dawning of a new day will come, and you will have an epiphany and things will fall away, and you will be left with the heart of your desire and the simplest route to the love in the moment for you. It could be that the lesson involved, you said it's happening over and over, this is an incarnational lesson. It helps to analyze one's incarnational lessons so that you can recognize them when they come. And then I think it helps to use your little pea brain, you know, the monkey brain that comes with the body. It has powers of analysis and logic that are very handy as long as they don't sweep you away and run away with you so that you have no more insight, you have no more heart, you have no more soul. The intellect can do that if you just let it run rampant. So don't do that. But use the logic, use the intellect, and ratiocinate upon the question, what is the theme that I keep seeing? Now, you articulated it pretty well on the surface, but what is not in there is how much of your decision to stay obedient to the wishes of others around you is based on ethical considerations, and how much of it is based on the cultural suggestion that everybody else has to be listened to before you listen to your own heart. There have been times in my life, and not just one, a repeating pattern for me has been that there was an ethical consideration that caused me to make a choice that made my mother, my father, my grandmother, my other grandmother, my great aunt, everybody in my life that could not follow my logic blanch and fall over in a stupor and say, no, no, no. And yet I did precisely what I thought was the right thing for me to do. Now, sometimes this has meant that I had to draw a boundary between myself and a loved one. And I had to say very clearly to that loved one, this is something that I need to do. I am very sorry. It has nothing to do with my feelings for you. It has to do with my feeling that this is the only appropriate response to my catalyst that I see, and I am going to follow it through. And then I have done that, and I actually have lost a couple of friends because of my steadiness. Once I see the ethical considerations clearly and see where the love is in the moment, then I simply move forward and do what I think should be done for me. It could be considered service to self, but the reason that sways me in such moments is the reasoning that in order to be of service in general, I need to keep my promises. I need to live a life of faith. I need to follow my rule of life. I need to be totally honest, and I need to be a person people can count on. My yea needs to be yea. My nay needs to be nay. And so that being true to myself, while it seems sometimes quite selfish, is motivated by my desire to hold a certain frequency, to be who I am, down to the bone, down to the heartstrings, and down to the guts, so that when people interact with me, they can believe me, they can trust me, and they can rely on me to keep my promises. In order to be that kind of person, there have been many times in my life that I have had to make choices that were extraordinarily unpopular. And it's possible that the way out of your situation of repetition, constant repetition, is for you to choose your heart's desire and dedicate yourself to the seeking of the truth along the lines that you wish. If you do that, be aware that you will never, except in hindsight, know if you made the right decision. I'm 67. I can look back over a whole lifetime of decisions made 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, pivotal decisions that brought me into starting L&L Research with Don Elkins in 1970. We had been working together since 62. I had been writing with him since 68, but it wasn't until 1970 that we decided to form a partnership, and that was the L&L Company, which we later renamed L&L Research because we thought that sounded better. And in 1976, we changed it to L&L Research when we published our first book. But I have since then had an unbroken tenure as L&L Research's channel, senior channel, and one of the people that is, you know, an officer on the board of directors and that kind of thing. And since Don died, I've been the leader. So I have enjoyed a peaceful expression of my outer gifts and hopefully my inner gifts as well with L&L Research for all these years. But it was based on decisions that I made earlier in my life when I was in my 20s and some decisions made in my 30s. that had I not done any one of the things that I did, I wouldn't have been in the right place at the right time to have the relationship with Don Elkins happen on a personal level, and to have it blossom into a working relationship, a professional relationship, which still goes on to this day, even though he's passed from this life in 84. He is part of my internal guidance now, and I visit with him every time that I tune up to channel. He's part of the work that I do still. So I think that the lesson that I'm trying to share is that you need to believe in yourself enough to recognize when the lesson is to stay and to love the people that you love, and be grateful for all the blessings in your life so that you have peace of mind because you feel you're doing the right thing. And when the lessons are pointing to making a change and stepping out on your own, unknown to you, obviously, is going to be whether or not it's a good idea. And it may even be unknown to you as to whether it's a good idea if you make that choice and step out on your own and disappoint some of the people around you. Only time can tell. Only hindsight will give you an idea of how you responded. Did you respond in love instead of fear? Did you respond towards unification and away from division? Did you respond towards loving others and not expecting to be loved? These are some of the values in the prayer of St. Francis, which I use every time I tune. And it's a wonderful prayer. I suggest that you read it, because given that your decision-making process turns out to be that which will have you stay in this situation, which at present sounds as though it's quite difficult for you, you will need to live that prayer. You will need to love, and you will need to let that be enough. And of course, if you step out on your own, you are stepping into midair, and you can only do that by what Kierkegaard called the leap into faith. So either way, you need to get in touch as much as possible with what your innermost heart feels is the best response, is the most loving response to the situation at hand. And then don't look back. Just do it. And take whatever comes in that spirit of peacefulness and attentiveness. I mean, I think the exciting thing about the Law of One's view of life is that it asks you to stay in the moment and to ask yourself, where is the love in this moment? And it's a very intimate, inward-looking way to live. I think that it's a valuable resource. So I wish you luck, Alex. I really do. I wish you inspiration, and I wish you above all the passion and the desire to serve that will polarize you, so that when you do leave this life, you'll be graduating into fourth density, where the reasons for everything, the mystery behind everything, is suddenly transparent. And I greatly look forward to that kind of transparency myself. But I'll tell you what, it cost us a lot to get here. We had to make a real dedication of ourselves to give this time to serving the people of planet Earth in an hour of need. So above all, you have to remember that your main gift is to be yourself. Your main gift is your essence, your being, your blooming. Earlier tonight, my husband asked me what a certain thing was that was going to be packed away to take to Nebraska. And I knew this, but I had forgotten I'd known it. A friend of mine wrapped a couple of presents for Mom McCarty, and she said, I put them right by the door, and it says, take to Nebraska, and he won't be able to get out the door without tripping over them. So he comes to me, and he says, what are these two packages that say, going to Nebraska? And I said, oh, Jim, I said, I really don't know. I'd forgotten completely about the conversation, brilliant as I am. And so he danced around, and he said, oh, and it, you know, oh, she doesn't know, and I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what the, you know. And I looked at him, and I said, Mick, I don't do too well with you joking at me because I'm really sorry. I don't know what that is. He says, it's okay. You've never been good at taking jokes, he said, but you know, I got a bloom. And that's what you need to do. You need to ask yourself, how can I bloom in such a way that I will be of the most service to the lightning of the planet? How can I keep my frequency of vibration open-hearted and full of love? And that, of course, is all of our main purpose in life. We have a common purpose. And before you ever get to the exterior purposes, the outer gifts, the purpose of being passive radiators of the love and the light of the infinite creator is our common purpose. We came here because we are uniquely qualified by our humanity to carry energies of infinity into the finite. So we are those who are like lighthouses. If we can keep our hearts open and the energy flowing through, and we cast light on ourselves and equally on all of humankind, because we're all connected, we are all one. So just in being peaceful and happy and grateful and thankful, you are being of tremendous service to planet Earth as a whole. And if you have nothing more than that to say for your life, then you have done a wonderful thing. And I've been ill sometimes in my life. I just recovered from major surgery to the point where I'm back at work, kind of like half back at work, because I've had another problem. I'm going to have more surgery. I'm going to have to get the bottom of my spine fused as well as the top. The top's been done. The bottom has yet to be done. And so I'm looking at more downtime. And it does not faze me because, well, for one thing, I think walking is a priority, and the operation will save my ability to walk. But for another thing, when I cannot do, I have ever so much more impetus to focus on being, on essence. And I got a lot of inner work done during the months that I recovered from having the 8 vertebrae at the top of my spine fused. And I am sure that throughout the somewhat lengthy recovery from this other operation, which should take place sometime in the new year, I will also have an incredible opportunity to count my blessings, to improve my tuning moment by moment as I deal with the pain that such an operation will cause. And, you know, all of those challenges that face me, I look forward to them, and I embrace them, and I hope to cooperate with them, because I do think that it's worth doing to have an operation to preserve one's ability to walk. It sounds a little daunting, but hey, I've done other things that were daunting in my life, and haven't we all? So just remember that your first job, Alex, is to keep your heart open and to have peace of mind. And let the monkey mind go. It's important that you do that for yourself, because otherwise you'll be constantly worrying and fretting. Even if you only spend 10 minutes a day determinedly not thinking of anything except the Creator. Find that hunger and thirst for the Creator that motivates you, and just be with it in the silence. just 5 or 10 minutes is enough to give you the spiritual chutzpah to move through the rest of your challenges. So I have no idea whether your correct decision is going to be to stay with the situation that is distressing you and love everybody in it and allow love to do its magic, because it really is an alchemist. Love will change things for you. Or whether it is necessary for you to draw some boundaries and move through your heart's desire as you expressed it in your question. I don't know what's the right answer. I have no idea. I do know that you, at some level, are going to be able to make contact with that. If you're a praying person, for heaven's sake, pray. If you're not a praying person, there are other techniques you can use. You can take a week, and you can want to change your life with everything that's in you. Think about it, obsess about it, monkey mind about it, visualize it, write about it, journal about it, and then the next week, want to stay. Obsess about it, analyze it, get into it, intensify it, and then at the end of the 2 weeks, you will have hopefully blown a lot of the monkey mind out of the water by your sheer intensity. And you'll be tired of the question. And at that point, when you just give up, it may well come to you, the epiphany that says this is what you should do. But let your response be couched in love. Even if you're saying to your nearest and dearest, I need to do this, and I know you don't understand, but I love you, and I will continue to love you, and you're in my heart. I just need to do this. Let that love be your fail-safe. Let that be your touchstone, your amulet of protection. And don't yield to the delicious indulgence of despair. Because despair is not a useful mindset. There are no problems solved because of despair. There are only mistakes made. Despair is the fear that has overcome the love, so that your spiritual being collapses and you are powerless. You do not need to give up your power. You need to have faith in yourself. You need to have faith in your destiny. And you need to have faith in your ability to discern the appropriate response to this catalyst. Good luck. You have help out there. Ask your guidance system. Ask your higher self. Ask the Holy Spirit. You're not alone. And I know that you will make a fine decision.
And I just want to add to that, we love you, Alex. We know you from the forum, and we do love you, so please remember you're not alone. Okay, we have a live caller. I'm going to get live on the air. This is from area code 847, and we have a couple of other questions in the chat room, Carla, that I sent you a message about, so you might want to check that. Okay, hi, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, who are we speaking to?
Roxanne.
Hi, Roxanne.
Hi. 2012 is coming, and the information on YouTube and Google and everything is going absolutely nuts about what all is happening to our planet. And I believe that we're going to go through a transformation to a higher density. However, I would like to know what your contacts in the higher densities, ETs and so forth, what kind of information you are getting from them relative to possible changes of our planet, and at this late date, less than 2 years away, or approximately 2 years away now, are we still able to affect a change by our own change within us, or are we too far down the road?
Well, that's a very good question, or a series of questions, and let's see what I can do with that. First of all, our readings have been gathered over a period of about 36 years. And at the beginning, the feeling was, and the Ra group expressed this in 81, 82, 83, that it was every possibility that the planet was going to have to shake us all off like fleas. It happened once before, hence the oil from the dinosaurs, and it could happen again. That was the basic thought. Edgar Cayce said that there would be a shift, a pole shift in 98, and it was only after 98 when it didn't happen that we began to realize that from the Confederation point of view, whether it was Ra or Kuo or whichever source that I happened to channel through the years, that they come from the same Confederation. And they tell the same story. They felt that there were so many people waking up so fast on planet Earth that the situation was changing really daily, and it was lightening. It was getting better. Now, this is hard to see, and you certainly can't prove it by the news, but what flies under the radar is completely different than what makes the news. You know, the old saying, if it bleeds, it leads. Well, people acting out of the goodness of their heart in service to their creator, in service to the planet, in service to each other, don't make the news for the most part, and yet people are making a huge difference, and there's just an incredible groundswell from the grassroots up of people that have awakened and cannot go back to sleep, and they simply will evolve. And this is lightening the consciousness daily. Now, the purpose of continuing to make every effort to lighten the consciousness of planet Earth by the way we are is to hope for the 100th monkey effect, to hope for there being such a huge groundswell that it overcomes the matrix, it overcomes the cultural conditioning, it overcomes the things that we have been taught, which are certainly not based on spirituality, but based on consumerism and getting ahead and protecting your tribe or your family and gathering the resources that you need to make it from the cradle to the grave without any discomfort. That's the planetary conditioning, at least in America today. And our conditioning actually should be quite a bit other than that. If we think about the implications of all things being one, we realize that Jesus was right when he said there are only two commandments: love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your strength, all your mind, and all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. If you love your neighbor as yourself, if you and your neighbor are one, you don't want that neighbor to go hungry. You don't want that neighbor to be uncomfortable or to be unsheltered or to be uneducated or to have no home. So the way that we treat each other in this country is coming from a place of fear that we won't have enough and anger at people that seem to want what we have. And actually, Jesus' directive was much more to the point. He said, feed my sheep. He said, Peter, do you love me? Peter says, yes, I love you, Lord. He says again, Peter, do you love me? He says, yes, I love you. He says, Peter, do you love me? And Peter says, for heaven's sake, I love you, I love you. Jesus says, feed my sheep. We are not feeding our sheep. We are not conscious enough of other people. We are not aware that they are us and we are them. We're not carrying our love to the point of realizing that if you're human, you're lovable, you're a soul, you're infinite, you're one of God's own people, and you are worthy, regardless of how you smell or how long you've been on the street, or what wrong you have done. Within you is a soul. So, and everybody has one, even the people on death row that people can stigmatize and say, well, they're just plain evil. Well, they certainly have done a lot of evil things, and they may well have mental illness that would indicate that, you know, that they don't even have the ability to make contact with what we would call conscience. But within them is a soul, so that basically we are all equal on a very real level. Now, what happens to this earth is not what people think when they are freaking out about everything's going to come to a sudden end. Apparently, we're not going to come to a sudden end unless it's man-made. And people still could, you know, start blowing other people up and cause a disastrous nuclear winter, as Carl Sagan used to say. But barring the nuclear winter of us blowing up each other, I think that we're good. The planet seems to be able to release the heat that has been generated by century upon century, millennium upon millennium of aggression, war, and murder, all for good reasons, of course. But let's face it, murder is murder. By having a tsunami here and an earthquake there, and of course they're all locally horrible, and take thousands of lives, but they don't take the planet. So I think that's the way the heat that has been generated by all this aggression is being released by the planet. It's not necessary at this point to fear a pole shift. It's not necessary to fear a physical ending, although it could be that we will have some cultural adjustments to make as economies change. And America hasn't experienced that kind of thing for quite a while. But, you know, it could happen. And if it happens, it's time to indicate your faith by calming down and being a source of reassurance of the values of life to those around you rather than panicking and living in fear. But this planet's light, according not just to the law of one material, but according to the Mayan calendar, according to traditional Western philosophy, is waning. Third density light is waning. And on the winter solstice of 2012, whether it's the dawning of the sixth sun, Mayan calendar, or the dawning of the age of Aquarius, classical Western astrology, or the beginning of fourth density, the density of love and understanding, the raw material and the confederation philosophy, it is a change, it's a shift, which means that fourth density light will be the active light, and the fourth density earth will be the active earth. Now, most people think that there's one earth, and it goes for first density, second density, third density, fourth density, and so on, all on the same planet. This is not so. The first density planet is visible to second density visible to third density will be visible to fourth. But the nature of fourth density is electrical, shall we say. It is the kind of illusion that is much finer than the illusion that we experience here, a very heavy chemical illusion here in third density. Our bodies are chemical distilleries, and you know, it's a heavy illusion. It blocks our ability to be aware of the truth, in fact, so that we have to seek it by faith alone, which is the whole purpose of third density. We need to make a choice here, a choice between service to others and service to self. And we can only make that choice with faith. We can't do it because it's been proven to us. So you'll find over and over that when you get to the nub of spiritual questions, you cannot prove them. You simply have to sense into them and become aware. The great thing about this, though, is that once you do that, once you leap into midair, once you leap into faith, you start getting feedback from all around you. You start seeing 11:11 on the clock, 12:12, you know, that kind of thing, 10:10. You start seeing repeating numbers, and you'll get confirmation of things that you're thinking. You'll see your totem. You'll see a street sign that is exactly what you've been thinking. There are all kinds of ways that the universe can interact with you if you're watching, if you're looking, if you're conscious and attentive to be more and more aware that you're in the flow, you're in the dance, and that all of creation is dancing with you. Fourth density will be aware of third density, but it won't be the same planet. it will be a planet that intersperses. I'm not sure that's the right word, but they intermingle so that we can see first, second, and third density here. And in fourth density, we'll be able to see the first three. But we will see them in an energy configuration, like our energy body, rather than a physical configuration. Fourth density is not physical, it's metaphysical. So, and you see this, for instance, in ghosts, where ghosts can walk through walls. And I have, in seances, seen ghosts come out of nowhere and pull down on the floor and disappear. They're coming into our density, clothing themselves with the medium's ectoplasm so they can show themselves. But of their own self, they have no substance in this illusion of third density. And fourth density will be like that. It will be a density that is much lighter and much more full of information. I think that there's always the possibility. It's funny, I was just talking with my brother about this last night. I think there's always the possibility that there could be a rapture. Everybody could be taken at once. Or everybody that's going on to fourth density could be taken at once. I doubt it. I doubt it so strongly that I would call 2012 a physical non-event, just like Y2K was. People were afraid that all the computers would crash and then all the power would go out and so forth. And it didn't happen. And I think that, you know, when we wake up on December 23rd, 2012, and we're all just still sitting here at the breakfast table, we're going to go, oh, okay, right, so now what? Well, now what? We keep on. We keep on keeping on with loving people and letting them love us back. And keeping our hearts open, that is the service to others way. And just having faith that that is enough, because really, if you do that, you get all the catalysts that you need and more, and you get all the choice points that you need in order to keep on expressing, yes, I believe in love, I believe in service, and I believe that I am ultimately worthwhile as a child of the Creator. And I take myself seriously enough to conduct myself with discipline, integrity, and the utmost devotion.
Okay, Roxanne, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much, Carla. I have a 2-year-old grandson who I think is already fourth density.
I wouldn't doubt it a bit.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Roxanne.
Roxanne, thank you so much for calling in, and hope you can join us again next week. I'm going to put you back on mute, and thanks so much for calling in. And thanks to everyone, to all of our listeners, especially to those who did submit questions. And if you have a question for next week's show, you can email it to me at magicalmoons.com. That's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K-A-L, moons@gmail.com. And please visit our website, llresearch.org, which is our archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And visit bringforth.org, bring the number 4th.org, which is our community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. And please visit our sponsor, waternurtureslife.com, for information regarding crystalline high vibration water, the missing piece to radiant health for wanderers and humans alike. So thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next week, December 3rd at 9 p.m. Good night, Carla. Good night to everyone.